Could you turn this volume up just a tiny bit? Thank you. Okay. I think we can chant together now. Om Bhadram Karne Bhishrinu Yama Deva Bhadram Pashyem Akshabhir Yajatraha Stirairangaihi Stushtuvagam Sastanubihi Vyashema Deva Hitai Yadayu Swasti Nahindro Vridhashravaha Swasti Nafpusha Vishwavedaha Swasti Nastarkshyo Arishtanemihi Swasti No Brahaspatirdadhatu Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi. Very good. We continue with our text, and very important passage in the text will be, we introduced verse 6 in our prior class, so we'll continue with verse 6. We'll see how far beyond that we go. Remember, the text began with a question about Brahman, how to discover Brahman. Let's define some nomenclature. I want to make sure if I use some terms that they're understood. Thank you. So a good definition of Brahman is... Sorry. Sarva Adhishthana. Adhishthana means basis or substratum. The basis or substratum for everything, sarva, sarvadhishthanam brahma. When we say the substratum for everything, like the clay is the substratum for the pot. Without the clay, pot could have no existence. And in fact, the pot has no existence separate from its underlying reality, the clay. So for the pot, clay is the adhishthanam. For your dream world, consciousness is the adhishthanam. Everything in your dream world consists of consciousness, is made from consciousness, is nothing but consciousness. So for your dream world, the adhishthana, the underlying reality or basis, is consciousness. And we're going to discover today that the sarva adhishthana, the reality because of which everything exists, is Brahman, understood as satyam jnanam anantam. We've used this terminology before. Satyam, that underlying reality, which is jnanam, consciousness. Consciousness is that underlying reality, which is anantam. And this led to the conclusion we made in the prior class and maybe the class before that, and that is that Brahman, the reality because of which all this exists, that reality can only be discovered within. And this question came up actually in satsang. Let me just introduce it briefly, and then we'll return to our text. How can that be that the reality because of which everything out here exists, Brahman, sarva adhishthana Brahman, how can it be that that reality can only be discovered within? It's also out there, correct? The reality which is out there is also in here. Equally so. Brahman is equally present within. Brahman is equally present without. Not more, not less. So then one might ask, well, why not seek Brahman out there? There's a problem. A problem of our tools of inquiry. If we're going to look for Brahman out there, what will be our tools of inquiry? Well, we have five senses: sight, hearing, smell, taste, touch. But then Brahman, as we understand, is without qualities. In fact, in today's class, we're going to distinguish between Nirguna, Brahma. Notice I'm using the short A. Long A is Brahmaji, the creator. The short A distinguishes Brahman, the Sarva Adhishtana. So we're going to distinguish today between Nirguna Brahma, without qualities, without gunas, without attributes, and Saguna Brahman. So ultimately, the Brahman, which is the reality because of which everything exists, the Sarva Adhishtana, is ultimately Nirguna, without qualities, traits, or attributes. Can you see something with your eyes that has no form, quality, traits? Can you hear? Can you taste, smell, or touch anything which is utterly free? So we recognize that our senses are utterly useless when it comes to penetrating to an underlying reality. Then the argument goes, well, we use reasoning in addition to our sense perceptions. This is very Vedantic. Based on our perceptions, we use logical inference. For example, when you see smoke rising above the mountain, you infer the presence of fire. Notice how sense perception and reason are very closely coupled in the use of inference. So someone might say, wait a minute, can't we use inference to discover Brahman? That is, with our senses, we try to perceive Brahman, and based on what we perceive, we infer the presence of Brahman. This is a huge logical problem, and here's why. We just said that Brahman can't be perceived by any of our senses. So at best, you can perceive the absence of Brahman. Fine. Brahman is not present in your perception. And then someone might argue, from the absence of the perception of Brahman in our perception, we can infer the presence of Brahman. There's a logical fallacy. From an absence, you can't infer anything. From the lack of smoke on the mountain, what can you infer? It must be Tuesday afternoon. If there's no smoke coming from the mountain, it must be Tuesday afternoon. Silly. You can't even infer the absence of a fire because a well-lit fire gives off little or no smoke. It could be a relatively smokeless fire. From the absence of something, you can't infer anything. So this little bit of introduction is just to establish that since our outward-turned inquiry is limited by our senses, and since Brahman ultimately is nirguna, nirakara, without form, without quality, without attribute, therefore, our senses are useless, reasoning based on senses are useless. So if you're looking for Brahman out there, that inquiry will never be fruitful. So there's only one other place to look. You have no choice. You will either look out there or you look in here. Fortunately, the ancient rishis all said, look within. And that's what our current verse is instructing us. Let's turn to that. And we'll pick up our thread for today's class. This is some very important material here. Verse 6. Okay. Repeat after me. Hrit pundarikam virajam vishuddham. Hrit pundarikam virajam vishuddham. Vichintya madhye vishadam vishokam. Vichintya madhye vishadam vishokam. Achintyam avyaktam anantarupam. Achintyam avyaktam anantarupam. Shivam prashantam amritam brahma yonim. Shivam prashantam amritam brahma yonim. It finishes in the next slide. tam arim adhyanta vihinam ekam. Tam arim adhyanta vihinam ekam. Vibhum chiranandam arupam adbhutam. Vibhum chiranandam arupam adbhutam. Good. So we'll be singing this now. The first part we discussed in the last class. In the second line, vichintya, thinking, inquiring. Inquiring is a very good trend, very good. Inquiring where? Madhye, within. Literally in the middle. And with in the middle or within, in the most general sense, means within yourself. We're going to give it a little different meaning later between mantras. We'll come back to that in a few minutes. So, madhye, within oneself, vichintya, inquiring. Inquiring where within oneself? Hrit pundarikam. In that pundarika, in that lotus, which is the hrit, hridaya, and in Vedantic texts and even in the Vedas, hrit, hridaya, heart, almost always mean buddhi, intellect. So, looking within the intellect, inquiring within the intellect. Inquiring into what? Into that which is virajam, without impurity, without rajas. Rajas, in a very general sense, means impurity. We'll add one more word up here. What's being described in this verse 6 is nirguna brahma upasana. Upasana here means meditation. So, a meditation on nirguna brahma. By the way, these words can be combined, and it's pronounced nirguna brahmopasana, if the words are combined. Brahmopasana or brahma upasana, when the words are separated. So, in verse 6, that's our topic. Guess what our topic in verse 7 is? Saguna brahmopasana. We'll see that perhaps towards the end of the class. So, how to meditate on something, sarva adhisthana, the basis for everything, how to meditate on something which is nirguna, without qualities, without attributes. Generally, you meditate on something. What does it mean to meditate on an absence? And we just began talking about this at the end of the prior class. Most of the words in this verse talk about not the presence of something, but rather the absence of something. Virajam, that which is free from impurity. Vishuddham, that which is free from ashuddhi, impurities. Pure means what? We use that word pure all the time. Be very clear that the word pure doesn't mean the presence of something. It means the absence of something. Pure water means what? The absence of anything but H2O. So the shuddham, pure, means the absence of impurity. Vishadam means clear. Clear means absence of color, like glass. A clear glass is clear. You can look right through it. Clear water, you can look through it. Absence of color or fogginess. So that Brahman is Vishadam, is clear. Vishokam, absence of sorrow, sadness, pain, hurt. Also, achintyam. There's an irony here. Achintyam, that which you can't think about. Look up one line. Vichintya, you should think about that which is achintyam, unthinkable. Hey, what? It's a very deliberate irony. Vichintya, inquire. You inquire by means of your mind, and using our minds, we are inquiring into something which is achintyam, not in the form of a thought. Can we do that? Absolutely. Our minds are very powerful. Our minds are capable of grasping things which cannot otherwise be grasped. Just to give you a very simple example, we're used to thinking in very concrete terms that we can only grasp things that are things, that are objects. that we can really define very, very clearly. Tell me, is goodness a thing? Is love a thing, an object? Goodness and love are not things, are not objects. Does it mean they're totally mysterious to us? No. So just because something doesn't have a particular form or concreteness about it doesn't mean it's a mystery to us. So what we're pursuing here, vichintya madhye, inquiring within, we're inquiring into something which is achintyam, not present in the form of a thought. Something which is avyaktam, not manifest with a particular form. Vyakta means manifest. In Hindi, when you use the word vyakti, you're talking about a soul that has been manifest with a body. That's why that person is called a vyakti. Here, vyakta, manifest, avyakta, not manifest. Not manifest means not having any form. Also, avyaktam, ananta, ananta rupam, that whose rupa, whose form is ananta. If you just think of infinite for that word ananta, you're missing out on the real sense of it. Ananta, even in English, infinite. Infinite means not finite. Absence. Ananta rupam, ananta means no anta, no edge, no end, no limit, no boundary, ananta. So ananta could be translated here as edgeless or boundaryless. You're looking within and to discover something which is boundaryless, which means it's not only within. If it's edgeless and boundaryless, it can't only be within. It is, of course, the sarva adhishtana. All of these terms are negative. If we only use negative terms, we can come very close to one school of Buddhism, famously known as Shunyavada. Shunyavada is the doctrine of one particular Buddhist school of philosophy that says that the underlying reality, the sarva adhishtana, the basis for which everything exists, is shunyam. Now, this is a little bit of a logical problem. You might object, wait a minute. How can nothing be the underlying reality for something? Pot can be made from clay. Pot cannot be made from nothing. So Vedantins don't like Shunyavada at all. It sounds very, very illogical. The Buddhists reply, it's okay. Shunya is a reality because of which everything exists, because nothing exists. Not very helpful, but this is the Buddhist reply to that argument. Vedanta, Advaita Vedanta, most certainly does not accept Shunyavada. The reality because of which everything exists cannot be a nothing. Cannot be a shunyam. It must be a something. Yet, all of the terms so far are negative terms. If we use only terms of negation, neti, neti, you've heard that before, na, iti, na, iti. If we only use terms of negation, it might lead you to that conclusion of shunyavada. So, the teachings of Vedanta include not merely negations, but also positive statements, statements of affirmation or assertion, and we see several of them in the next line. That which is Shivam. Shiva here does not mean the deity. Shiva as an adjective. Shiva as a noun means Bhagavan, Maheshwara. But Shiva as an adjective, which is how it's used here. Shiva as an adjective means that which is pure, that which is holy, that which is sacred, that which is auspicious. Shiva has all those meanings as an adjective. So here, that which is holy, that which is sacred, that which is prashantam, peaceful. Although shanti or prashantam is an example of a word that sounds positive, but it's actually negative. Shanti sounds like a positive thing. When in meditation you experience shanti, you attain shanti, you gain shanti, sort of. You don't really gain shanti. You may have heard me talk about this in other contexts. You can't gain shanti. Shanti is what's left when everything else goes away. Just like at the metaphor I've given before, at home, if you've got several little children running around screaming and shouting and throwing things, and you want some shanti at your home, what do you need to acquire for the sake of shanti at home? And it's a trick question. You don't need to acquire anything. It's a matter of getting rid of something, in particular, getting rid of the screaming kids. When you get rid of the screaming kids, what remains is shanti. Really speaking, the word shanti is a negative term. In fact, it comes from a dhatu. The verbal root sham means to sleep, is the root from which it comes. So sleep is a state of withdrawal, a state of absence of worldly experience. Anyway, enough said. So prashantam sounds positive. It's actually a negative word. Shivam most certainly is a positive word. Amritam, another negative word. Na mritam yasya, one for whom there's no death, is amritam. You can translate it as eternal, immortal. But eternal, immortal means not mortal. Eternal is another positive word, but it masquerades what it truly is. It's another negating word. A very important positive word here. Next one, Brahma Yonim. Yoni, literally womb, but source. The source which is Brahman. The yoni for the world, the womb of the world, which happens to be Brahman. So clearly, sarva adhishtana. Brahma yoni means what? Sarva adhishtana. That which is the underlying reality for the whole world. I just want to finish this verse, and then we want to look at the meditation. The verse concludes in the next slide. Tam, that one, that Brahman, that sarva adhishtana, is adi madhya anta vihinam. Tam, that one, is vihinam, without. More negation. Without what? Without adi, beginning. Without madhya, middle. Without anta, end. Adi madhyanta, vihinam, without beginning, middle, or end, that which is timeless, that which exists not in time. What about these positive words? Well, at least we have one positive word coming. What is the one positive word? One. Ekam. So ekam, it is that one. Tam ekam, taking the first and last words of that line. Tam ekam, that one. Tam ekam brahma yonim, that one source of the cosmos. That one source of the cosmos is vibhum, all-pervasive. All-pervasive is another positive word, which actually is a negative one, right? All pervasive means not having boundaries, not having edges, not having limits. All pervasive is fine, but it's actually a negative word. Where are these positive words then? And the most important ones are next. Chit anandam. Chit, consciousness. Anandam, fullness, completeness, perfection. Can't translate it as the experience of bliss. Experience of bliss experience of bliss has an adi, beginning. Experience of bliss has a madhya, middle. Experience of bliss has an anta, end. Therefore, the experience of bliss is not adi madhyanta vihinam. It's not without beginning, middle, and end. So ananda here cannot mean experiential bliss. It does mean fullness, completeness, perfection, which is chit, consciousness. And this is the introduction to the meditation. I'll describe the meditation in just a moment. But to finish the verse, one more negative, another negative, arupam, having no form, more negation. And finally, we throw our hands up and say, what is this all about? Adbhutam. It's just amazing. Literally amazing. Could they stretch it to a little mysterious? Mysterious in the sense of not being completely accessible to pure reason. Pure reason is going to have a hard time. How to reason about absence? So we have the absence of all these qualities, no form, no beginning, middle, or end, no impurities, no attributes. How do you reason about absences? I gave the example of no smoke on the fire. Or here's another good example. Let's reason based on the absence of an apple in my hand. Based on the absence of an apple in my hand, what can you conclude? Shall you conclude that I ate it already? That would be a false conclusion. Anything you conclude based on the absence of the apple in my hand is a false conclusion. You cannot reason based on absences. I don't want to make a big thing of this, but this is one of the most common flaws in reason. You reason based on absence. Whenever there's an argument based on the absence, how about it hasn't rained for several days, therefore. The economy has not yet recovered, therefore. Look at that. The economy has not yet recovered. The absence of recovery. To reason based on an absence ends up being a faulty argument. There are other ways of dealing with it. I'm just making this point anyway. So, adbhutam, amazing. Amazing because this is something that pure reason cannot grasp. All of these words are negating. Yet, not all of the words are negating. Perhaps the most important ones here were brahmayonim, tam ekam brahmayonim, that one source of all, that sarva adhishtana, which is shivam, holy, sacred. But what does that mean? Chidanandam. And there's the key. Chidanandam, the consciousness within. Madhye, vichintya madhye, it said. To look within, to inquire within. And now let us try to develop what exactly is nirguna brahmopasana. I've never heard this taught or read it taught anywhere, so let's see what happens if we try to describe it in a very sequential way. How to meditate on Brahman's presence within, given the fact that Brahman is not a thing you discover. Whatever you discover in the form of a thought, let me rephrase it. Whatever arises in your mind during meditation is not Brahman. Correct? Absolutely correct. Whatever arises in your mind during meditation, by definition, is not Brahman. The very fact that it arises, what did we just see? No adi, no beginning. If it arises, it has a beginning. Anything that arises in your mind is a thought. It's not Brahman. So then how can we possibly use meditation for the sake of Nirguna Brahmopasana, for the sake of this inquiry into Nirguna Brahman. And let's look at some stages. We took that expression vichintya madhye to vichintya, inquiring, madhye, in the middle. Now, the rishi most likely meant within yourself. But we can interpret it a little bit. I'm not sure that's what the rishi had in mind, but as long as it works, it's a valid interpretation. It's still in keeping with the vision of the rishi. Madhye could mean in your mind, in your buddhi. Madhye could mean in between what? In between thoughts, in between repetitions of a mantra. Several verses from now, we're going to see Om introduced as a mantra. So let's presume that the mantra is Om. This discovery that's being discussed here takes place in meditation. The prior verse, just so we don't lose our context here, what did the prior verse say? Vivikta deshe sukhasnastaha, sitting in a quiet place, sitting comfortably in a quiet place, shuchihi, being pure, samagriva shira shariraha, with being pure, having your body straight and aligned, antyashmastaha, renouncing all other activities, sakalendriyani nirudhya, withdrawing all of your senses. What's being described in that prior verse, as we saw in the last class? Meditation. So let's be very clear. The current verse, verse 6, is talking about meditation. Vichintya madhye. Vichintya, inquiring within, meditating on that which is within. Now let's try to define what is that meditation. The mantra Om is going to be described in several verses, so let's assume it is a meditation on Om. Om, 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 etc. You're meditating on Om. In your mind is a dhyana vishaya, an object of meditation. That object of meditation is a mantra Om. Your attention is fixed on Om, and when your attention is completely fixed on Om, you have achieved what Patanjali calls dhyana, meditation. And that's what we saw in that second verse, or prior verse. Shraddha Bhakti Dhyana Yogat. So dhyana here, meditation, means Sajatiya vritti pravaha, the technical definition that's given, sajatiya vritti pravaha, a pravaha, a flow of sajatiya, identical vrittis. A flow of identical vrittis. Om, 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 Om. Prior to dhyana, you're kind of in and out. You'll be Om, 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 itch, Om, Om. Right? That's how meditation usually is. Om, 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 itch. Om, Om. Well, that is the stage prior to dhyana. Dhyana, as defined by Patanjali, is where there's no more itch. There's only Om. So let us define this as stage one. The first part of Nirguna Brahmopasana is dhyana. And dhyana defined as fixing your attention on the object of meditation. In this case, the object of meditation is Om. In Patanjali's Yoga Sutras, dhyana is not the goal. Patanjali gives ashta anga, eight limbs. Dhyana happens to be the seventh of the eight limbs. So then we're not there yet. So there's one more step after dhyana. According to Patanjali, it is samadhi. Samadhi is a state of absorption. In a state of absorption, something goes away. That's what we mean by absorption. Something gets absorbed. Something dissolves. Something undergoes resolution. There are many kinds of samadhi, six kinds of samadhi he talks about. We'll keep it simple in this class. What is it that can go away when you're really concentrating on Om? That's dhyana. And then when you're absorbed in Om, what is it that goes away? And this is a trick question. Well, hankara is a technical answer. The simple answer is you go away. The meditator goes away. In dhyana, what is present is meditator and object of meditation. Two things are present in dhyana. Om is present, and you are present as the meditator. Now, what does it mean when you are present as the meditator? Someone correctly said the technical expression is the ahankara, ego, sense of being an individual is still present. So one form of meditation is when ego undergoes resolution. Ego becomes resolved. So instead of, as you're chanting Om, 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 instead of feeling that I am the meditator and Om is the object of meditation on which my attention is fully focused, you don't think all those words, of course, but that's your sense in meditation, then in samadhi, you go away and the mantra remains. Very simple. It's not very complex. First, in dhyana, you are present and the mantra is present. In samadhi, the mantra is still present, you've gone away. Om, 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 Om continues. Now, third aspect. Third aspect is an appreciation of what goes on in between repetitions of Om. Vichintya madhye, inquiring in between. And now we're interpreting it, inquiring in between repetitions of the mantra. In practice, it may be helpful to space out your repetitions of Om, so you create long gaps of silence in between Om. You may start off Om, Om, Om. By the way, Om is not usually recommended in general as a main mantra, but this is a very advanced practice. So for a very advanced practitioner, Om would be appropriate. Om, silence. Om, silence. Om, silence. So the third step is simply the creation of these gaps of silence. Why the silence? In the second step of samadhi, the meditator went away. In the third step of silence, both the meditator is gone and the mantra is gone. So what's left in this third state, what's left, well, you might be tempted to say nothing, but wait a minute. If there was nothing left, how could you emerge after meditation? You're something. If there's nothing, you're a something, you can't come from nothing. So in this condition where the meditator has gone, ahankara is gone, the object of meditation, the mantra has gone away, what remains is atma sorupa, your true self, your true nature. Your true nature being what? Satchidananda. And remember how we define these terms. Satchidananda, chit, consciousness, which is sat, unborn, uncreated, unchanging, and ananda, full, complete, boundaryless, limitless. This is our definition of true nature. That remains in that gap. So in that silence, all that's left is Atma. Now watch this. What can you do in that gap of silence? Nothing. You can't think of, if you start thinking, silence is ruined. You can't, what does it mean to reflect on it? You can't do anything. In fact, you're not even there to do anything. Your ego has resolved. So this fourth step occurs here. It's actually an interruption of the meditation. Dhyana comes to an end. Nididhyasana begins. So far, everything we've described is Patanjali's process of dhyana in different stages. But now comes Nididhyasana. Nididhyasana, we translate as contemplation. Contemplation requires thinking. Can you contemplate the meaning of life without thinking? Can you contemplate what you're going to have for dinner without thinking? Contemplation requires thinking. Nididhyasana is contemplation. You have to think. Think about what? Watch this. In Nididhyasana, which follows meditation, it's in, you interrupt, basically, you interrupt your meditation for the sake of contemplation. In that interruption, you undertake a reflection. What is that reflection? What was happening in that silence? The silence is already gone. You're now thinking. And you think, in that silence, what was present? Well, I was present as Satchidananda Atma. Satchidananda Atma, which is the reality because of which I exist. And the reality because of which I exist cannot be separate from the reality because of which everything exists. That's the Mahavakya, Tattvamasi. You cannot do Nididhyasana. You can't contemplate Vedantic wisdom unless you've already acquired Vedantic wisdom. You cannot contemplate on something that's unknown. You can only contemplate what is already known to you. So suppose what's already known to you is that your true nature is Satchidananda, which is present in that silence between repetitions of the mantra. That's already well known to you. It's also well known to you the meaning of the Mahavakya, which reveals that the truth, the reality because of which you exist, cannot be separate from the reality because of which everything exists. In that reflection, Nididhyasana, you appreciate that the reality because of which I exist is the sarva adhishtana, the reality because of which everything exists. This is the meditation prescribed in this verse. It is nirguna brahmopasana. It's a very lofty practice, but this is what Advaita Vedanta is about. This is the culmination of Advaita Vedanta. This is not an introductory class, as I mentioned before, and this is not an introductory text. So here we have a text that goes right to the culmination of Vedantic teachings, and that is contemplation of the ultimate truth. So notice, even though Brahman is nirguna, notice that this whole process is absolutely valid. At no point are we trying to say, meditate on nirguna Brahman. Nirguna Brahman is not an object that you can meditate on. What are you meditating on? Om, or some other mantra. But not merely that. You're meditating on Om, then the ego undergoes dissolution. Then you have an opportunity to appreciate that silence between repetitions of the mantra. Then meditation gets interrupted. During the interruption of your meditation, you perform Nididhyasana. You reflect what was going on in that silence. The only thing present was me as Satchidananda. And that Satchidananda, which is a reality because of which I exist, That Satchidananda is Satyam Jnanam Anantam Brahma, the reality because of which everything exists. What is the next step? Start over. That's the process. Remember, Nididhyasana interrupts the meditation. Ego will come back. Om will go away. Mantra goes away. Dhyana goes away. So during Nididhyasana, you're thinking. So the meditative process is interrupted. So then after that inquiry is done, after that Nididhyasana is done, then you can resume the process and continue as you want. So what is the meditation? We have it in very wonderful verses. Now, pretty advanced stuff, right? What if you're not up to it? Possible. In order to undertake this process, it requires a lot of preparation. The ability to do dhyana, which means to repeat your mantra with full concentration without any interruptions. That's difficult. Then to attain the kind of samadhi where your ego dissolves, where you are no longer present as a meditator, that's even more difficult. Then that silence. Generally, when you stop chanting your mantra, isn't that when your mind starts to wander? Exactly. So there's a lot of training of the mind required so that your mind doesn't wander during those intervals of silence. That's difficult. And then the final step, Nididhyasana, presumes that you already have Atmajnanam. You already know that you are Satchidananda Atma, and you already know at least the meaning of the Mahavakya. Not that you've discovered it personally, but at least you know what it means, what it reveals. That's a tall order. To have all four of these elements is a tall order. Certainly not everyone will have that at a given time. And this Brahmaji who's teaching, remember the context, Brahmaji is teaching this to the Rishi Ashvalayana. So Brahmaji seems to appreciate that. Maybe even the sage Ashvalayana is not ready for this. We don't know. In fact, we might guess. The next verse backs down from Nirguna Brahmopasana and introduces Saguna Brahmopasana. What does that suggest? That suggests that maybe even the Rishi Ashvalayana was not right. We don't know. But it suggests, it's the experience a teacher has sometimes when you're talking about a topic. I don't really get that sense here, but it happens in some context that a teacher will be talking something and the response of the audience is this. Huh? What? and the glassy stare and the kind of a puzzled look on the face. It happens. So perhaps that happened to Ashvalayana. Brahmaji recognized it. And then in the very next verse, what is taught is Saguna Brahmopasana. So recognizing that not everyone can come up to this level, then Saguna Brahmopasana is then taught as a stage of preparation to get you ready for Nirguna Brahmopasana, then Saguna Brahmopasana. We have to discuss what is Saguna. Let's see the verse here. Uma sahayam parameshwaram prabhum. Uma sahayam parameshwaram prabhum. Trilochanam nilakantam prashantam. Trilochanam nilakantam prashantam. Dhyatva munir gacchati bhutayonim. Dhyatva munir gacchati bhutayonim. Samasta sakshim tamasah parastat. Samasta sakshim parastat. In the third line, dhyatva munihi. Munihi, a sage, a wise one, who dhyatva meditates. Meditates on whom? Look up at the first line. Meditates on Prabhum. Meditates on the Lord. Not Brahman. Meditates on Prabhum, the Lord. Which Lord? Parameshwaram, the Supreme Lord. Which one? Only Hindus can ask that question. Supreme Lord means there's only one. Because supreme means that over which no one else can excel, right? That's what supreme means. Only Hindus can say, which supreme Lord are you talking about? Because we understand all aspects of one supreme Lord. In this case, it's talking about one who is Uma Sahayam. The one who is accompanied by Uma. Uma is Parvati. The one who is accompanied by Parvati is Lord Shiva. What's being taught here is Shivopasana, meditation on Lord Shiva. Now, Shiva is Saguna Brahman. Saguna Brahman means Brahman with traits, with attributes. In particular, suppose we say, Brahman looked upon as the one unto whom everything returns at the end of time. Well, the one unto whom everything returns at the end of time is a quality, a trait, an attribute. So here we've defined Shiva as Saguna Brahman, but be very careful. Shiva is not other than Brahman. The addition of an attribute doesn't add or take away anything. Just like clay with the form of a pot is still clay. You can refer to it as pot, but it's still clay. In fact, it's only clay. It takes on the qualities of potness, but in fact, it's only clay. In the same way, Nirguna Brahman can take on the qualities of Shiva-ness, Shivatva. So Brahman with Shivatva, Nirguna Brahman, with Shivatva becomes Saguna Brahman, but it's still nothing but Brahman. Clay with potness is nothing but clay. Nirguna Brahman with Shivatva, Shivaness, is nothing but Nirguna Brahman. So Dhyatva, meditating on that Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva, who of course is Trilochanam, three eyes. Who is Nilakantam? References to mythological stories. Has a blue neck. Why? When those devas and asuras are churning up that ocean and that poison comes out, what an elaborate mythological story that's being referred to in the midst of this profound Upanishad. But this is the idea. Saguna Brahman brings in all the mythological stories. So Lord Shiva, who has three eyes, Lord Shiva, who has that blue throat, having consumed the poison, Lord Shiva, who is Prashantam, peaceful here in a sense of meditating. There are several forms in which we envision Lord Shiva. One of them is Dakshinamurti on our altar. Another is perhaps Shiva Nataraja. Here, Prashantam refers to Dhyana Shiva, Shiva sitting and meditating. That's a particular form. And you've seen the picture. His eyes are half closed. His arm might, he usually will have a trident. An arm might be up on that yoga danda, that stick. Ganga, of course, will be coming out of the hair. You know, this form, he'll have a snake. All of this symbolism is present. That's what's being described here. So, Dhyatva, meditating on that Saguna Brahman, meditating here on Lord Shiva, very specifically. Now you say, why not Vishnu? Well, this happens to be a Shaiva Upanishad. That is, Upanishads will fall into several categories. Now, some of them are involved with the tradition of worship of Lord Shiva. Others will be in a tradition of worship of Lord Vishnu. Other in a tradition of worship of Devi. So this one happens to be a Shaiva Upanishad. So definitely meditating on Lord Shiva. So Munihi, the sage, Dhyatva, meditating, not meditating on Nirguna Brahman. Why not? Can't. Either the mind is not properly trained for that dhyana, the samadhi doesn't come, the mind wanders during the silence, the Vedantic wisdom upon which you're supposed to contemplate, that Vedantic wisdom hasn't gone in sufficiently. For whatever reason, this is a muni who is unable, incapable of nirguna brahmopasana, so therefore he undertakes saguna brahmopasana. But then you're thinking, what good is that? What good is that? Look what the text says. So that munihi, that sage, undergoing, practicing saguna brahmopasana, what did that sage get? Gacchati, reaches bhuta yonim. Bhuta yonim is brahma yonim. Same thing, is the source of all. That saguna brahma upasaka, the meditator on saguna brahman, discovers the same thing that one meditating on nirguna brahman discovers. Then why the distinction if they discover the same thing? Well, it's a matter of stages. So the one meditating on saguna brahman eventually becomes capable of meditating on nirguna brahman. Be very clear about it. Saguna brahmopasana prepares you for nirguna brahmopasana. Meditating on deities prepares you for meditating on nirguna brahman. This really shows the step-by-step progression of sadhana. A lot of the Upanishads in the tradition are focused on that step-by-step progress. So this muni, this rishi, the sage, meditating on saguna brahman, finally reaches bhuta yonim, that same nirguna brahman that the other meditator discovered. So the muni gacchati reaches bhuta yonim, the source of all, nirguna brahman, the source of all, which here is described as samasta sakshi. What an interesting term to use for brahman. Brahman here is called samasta sakshim, the sakshi, the witness of samasta, of all. The witness of all. How can Brahman be the witness of all? Brahman is the all-pervasive consciousness. As all-pervasive consciousness, Brahman is samasta sakshi, the witness of all, and consciousness, which is tamasaha parastat, which is parastat, beyond tamas. This is an expression, very poetic expression, that's used in many Upanishads. I don't know how many. At least, I can think of at least three or four where this expression occurs. Tamasaha parastat. Beyond darkness, beyond nothingness, beyond tamas, consciousness. That consciousness which is beyond. So here, we've seen in these two verses, nirguna brahmopasana, saguna brahmopasana. If you can't manage nirguna brahmopasana, then practice saguna brahmopasana, but it's not the end of the road. Worship of deities, meditating on deities, is not the culmination in the view of Advaita Vedanta. The culmination is to discover that brahma yonim, that source because of which everything exists. And where is that discovered? We'll just end by reflecting on that irony. The reality because of which everything exists can only be discovered within yourself. And that's what that prior verse was about, and then supported by this verse. So next, we'll conclude here for tonight, but we have some nice verses coming up, talking about both saguna brahmopasana and nirguna brahmopasana. We'll continue that in our next class. We'll conclude with our prayers.